big planes landing.
Long
yeah, well,
radio.
If you've flown out of Washington Reagan Airport, then you know that there are typically smaller aircraft, domestic flights, that fly out of Reagan. They're not, because the runway is so short at Reagan, they couldn't have the larger jets that needed more time for takeoff, and therefore you didn't have transcontinental flights and you didn't have international flights out of Reagan unless it was for short haul or a connection. But now United Airlines will soon be flying the biggest jets out of Reagan Airport. So that's very interesting.
It'll be nice to see something bigger than the 737 going out in there.
Yeah. Now, Gene, I have to tell you, folks, he knows all the aircraft. It's not something I really pay attention to. I mean, I do, but I don't. You know, I don't study it or I don't keep the information. I know what aircraft I'm flying on at that moment. But Gene knows all the breakdowns, all the configurations. So what was the maximum, do you know, that could fly out of Reagan before now?
Because of the runway size and the designation, it was a 737, and now they're talking about the 757. That's not a wide body, but it's still a very large plane. This holds over 200 people.
Now, I do know the aircraft that start with seven are typically Boeing.
Yeah, these are all Boeings. That means on the Airbus, you got nothing bigger than a 320.
Right. Now, what's the seat configuration that we're talking about?
It's still going to be single aisle and a 3-3 or a 2-2 in first class, but it's going to go up from about 141, 181 to a 737-800 to over 200 with a 757.
Okay. And
that
so,
range can go east to west now.
Right. So when you're talking about the 3-3 or 2-2, that's the number of seats on each side of the aisle.
That's right.
I told you he knows all this stuff. I don't know. I know what I'm on at the time that I'm flying it, but I'm happy to see that United Airlines is bringing in a larger jet because that also means that you can get some transcontinental flights.
More capacity and longer flights.
Yeah.
That's right. Leap year, one great benefit is $29 fares.
Oh, $29 fares for 29 days in February.
Excuse me, I'm running to the internet right now.
Well, that's something that JetBlue is offering for the month of February. They're having their leap day fares. So you can get flights for as low as $29 on some of the markets. So, yeah, visit JetBlue.com and get some information on what flights they're operating for just $29. And some of them are the transcontinental flights from New York to San Francisco, for example, or Boston to Seattle or Los Angeles to Florida. So these are some pretty long-haul flights.
Well, very limited, but so jump on those.
Yeah.
Wi-Fi across the Atlantic Ocean?
Yeah, Delta All Airlines right. is now adding Wi-Fi connectivity on transatlantic flights. I mean, other non-U.S. carriers have had it, but now the U.S. carriers are getting into the game of it. I remember a couple of years ago there was a lawsuit with United Airlines that a passenger had purchased Wi-Fi on an international flight,
yeah.
not understanding that they would lose connectivity once they crossed the international,
once they left the United States air. Yeah.
But she did not win that suit because United Airlines said that it's clearly indicated in the terms and conditions and the policy when she purchased it. So,
well, the limitations is it doesn't kick in to 10,000 feet, and it did not go across water.
Right.
So you've got to look out for both of these.
Yeah, and that includes Hawaii in a lot of cases, too.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Even
yeah.
though Hawaii is in the United States, it's just that ocean crossing sometimes that poses a problem, and I can just imagine her sitting there watching her movie, and then it goes out, and I can only imagine what she did on the aircraft trying to,
trying to get her $5 back.
Yeah.
The airlines are actually being less greedy.
Yeah, they are, and we've already talked about a couple of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're bringing back the free snacks. They're giving some priority boarding, and you're getting some additional meal options and drink options. This is where we are starting to see some significant savings or perks based on low fuel costs. And the airlines said this. We talked about this last year on some of our news stories, that the airlines said that they didn't immediately lower the fares, but they were instead looking at reinvesting in their product, in their brand, and in their fleet.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see that. I've seen newer aircraft.
Better entertainment on the planes.
Exactly.
You've got more movie selections, and they're more current.
They still have some improvements to make, but I'm happy with the improvements that they've made so far.
This is a serious thing. This Zika virus is really making it hard to travel just about everywhere.
It is, and it has really taken off. I mean, when you first heard about it, you just kind of thought it was kind of isolated and maybe it was kind of like the West Nile and it would kind of go away, but it seems to be growing and it seems to be picking up a lot of steam and covering more and more territory, which is a bit scary. We're talking about something that I recall starting in Brazil. If it started anywhere else, I don't know, but with Brazil. And then it has quickly gone through other countries in South America, all through Central America, and now coming up into the lower states. However, they're saying in the United States, the only cases that are reported were transmitted human to human, not from the mosquito.
Yeah, because it's winter. So our mosquito problem's not here. What I'm concerned about is when the mosquito season kicks in, will it be eradicated or will it still be out there moving from south to north?
Yeah. Look,
there's a lot of countries now in this whole hemisphere that are on the warning list right now.
They're on the warning list. And if you're considering travel, especially if you are with child or even considering conceiving, this is the biggest warning, is that you should not travel to any of these areas. And you should go on cdc.gov. You can also go to travel.state.gov and familiarize yourself with the travel warnings, with the travel alerts, and the concerns and what you should do. You really need to prepare yourself with that.
And the list of countries that you should and should not be going to, and that includes a lot of Caribbean, Central American, South American, including U.S. Virgin Islands and other places. So you have to be concerned.
Yeah, it's growing pretty fast. We're talking about roughly 30 countries and territories in the Americas that are affected. And then, you know, people are already considering changing their plans over the Zika virus. I certainly would. And it's also a case for travelers insurance. But here's the thing with travelers insurance, and this is why it's so important to buy it the minute that you purchase your ticket. Because the Zika virus is now already there, it probably won't be covered if you're just buying traveler's insurance, because it has to be an incident that occurs prior to you buying the traveler's insurance.
It's something you need to read the fine print before you purchase and think you're covered. And it's also a health-related item, so you'll need to check your health insurance if you get ill while you're down there.
Right, and certainly if you, as I stated earlier, if you are pregnant at any stage, and even if you're considering conceiving, they have a warning against traveling to those destinations. Well, that's it for our travel news, and when we come back, we're going to have Javon's Travel Minute. We're also going to talk about the most romantic cities around the world. You're listening to The Traveling Eye. I'm Javon Harley on HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141.
Need some encouragement to get through the week? Want some inspiring words to uplift your spirit? Then join HUR Voices for Divine Inspiration, Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll hear from eminent guest speakers from Howard University's historic Rankin Chapel. For more on Divine Inspiration, like HUR Voices on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at HUR_voices.
Hey, what up, world? This is Sway from Eminem's J45. Every weekday morning, we serve up the revolving door of celebrities. Like Kim Kardashian.
It's like, you know, like
Kevin Hart.
Sway's show is a big media hit.
Jennifer Lopez.
Leave it to Sway. Yep. You know what you're doing. That's why you Sway.
Mike Tyson is here.
Sway's got the voice. Your voice influences people.
Sway in the morning. Weekdays from 8 a.m. to 12 noon Eastern on Eminem's J45.
Channel 45 and on the Sirius XM app.
Tired of hearing one-sided opinions on politics, economics, entertainment, anything and everything?
That's right! That's right!
Searching for brutal honesty and unbiased evaluation of today's current topics?
Searching for the truth?
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe it's time that you tune into the Glass House Project, a place where the norm is challenged and the bare facts are presented. The Glass House Project.
The Glass House Project.
The Glass House Project. Here on HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141.
What's going down, everybody? This your boy Mario.
You should let me love you.
Okay, are you talking
Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm your host, Javon Harley. Don't forget to visit the website. It's thetravelingeye.com. There you can find all sorts of things like the Traveling Eye blog, travel tips, and you can join the travel club.
And now, Javon's Travel Minute.
In 1936, Willa Brown became the first woman to obtain a private pilot's license in the United States. She was part of the National Airmen's Association of America in 1939, whose sole purpose was to integrate the Army so that black pilots could get the chance to fly. In her military career, Brown was an advocate for all black pilots, male and female. Brown became the head of the Civilian Pilot Training Program in Chicago, where black pilots were selected for the Tuskegee Training Program. She went on to become a coordinator for the Civil Aeronautics Authority and a member of the Federal Aviation Administration's Women's Advisory Board. Willa Brown passed away in 1992 at the age of 86. This is Javon, and that was a Black History tribute on women in aviation. Well, Valentine's Day is here, folks. It's right around the corner. It's that time when we celebrate love and romance. So today, I'm going to take you on a romantic journey around the globe, starting with Paris, France. Now, Paris is noted as the city of love and romance, maybe because of its sweet-sounding language, its gastronomy, its luxury and refinement, and, of course, what I think, its free-spirited living. Paris is beautiful and romantic year-round, but the spring is by far the best time to go. I've had the pleasure of being in Paris in the springtime, and I must concur. The weather is beautiful. The flowers are in bloom. It's not as crowded with other tourists as the summer months, and it's a bit more affordable. I'm talking about March and April. One of the best ways to experience Paris is on foot. A not-to-be-missed monument and the symbol of Paris is the Eiffel Tower. Walking the grounds and going to the top is a must. You can go up the tower by stairs, or you can take the elevator. Once inside, there are several dining options, from snacks to fine dining, that'll fit everybody's budget. They also have a champagne bar if you just want some bubbly at the top of the Eiffel Tower. On the third floor, you're at what's called the cloud level. And the cloud level has an exceptional 360-degree view of the city. Now, if you're on a serious budget or if you just want a more personal experience, you can have a picnic with some French treats in the garden, Champ de Mars. And then north of the city is the District Montmartre, another place high above the city with fantastic views. This is one of my favorite places. Montmartre is a great place for lovebirds because you can get lost in the narrow streets that wind up the steps of Butte that lead to the Sacré-Cœur. Now, if you can't walk, it's also accessible by the little train of Paris, Montmartre. And in the plaza, there's a merry-go-round and the famous Mur des Je T'aime, or the I Love You Wall. The wall has an I Love You written in 280 different languages. And then finally, in Montmartre, a fun thing to do is to capture the moment, the experience that you've had, by having your portrait painting by one of the local artists that hang out in the Place du Tétard. And nearby, you can visit the charming Musée de la Vie Romantique, or the Museum of Romance. Now, another area that is very popular in Paris, especially with the couples, is one of the most charming historic neighborhoods, the Marais. The Marais district is a historic district in Paris, and it has some of the oldest buildings and monuments in the city. This is where you'll also discover the romantic Place Vosges, one of the oldest and beautiful squares in Paris. Now, a lot of visitors go there to stroll under the arches or along the paths of the Central Garden. And, of course, you can admire some of the beautiful red brick facades that are there. The square is also an ideal point to begin your walk in the Marais, discovering mansions of the 17th and 18th centuries that have now been transformed into internationally renowned museums. And then they're the riverbanks. You certainly can't talk about Paris without talking about the riverbanks. The riverbanks are perfect places to stroll with your honey. The bridges are also very appealing to couples. And according to tradition, lovebirds should kiss and make a wish under the Pont Marie, which is also nicknamed Lover's Bridge. There's also the Pont des Arts and the Pont de l'Évêché, and they're popular with couples from all over the world, a lot of whom have taken to attaching love locks to the railings. Now, this love lock tradition and trend has come to a screeching halt because the weight of the locks was destroying the railings of the bridge. So now that trend has been replaced with taking selfies, and it certainly has been a lot less weight on the bridge because of it. Of the 37 bridges crossing the Seine, the most famous is the Pont Neuf, which dates back to the end of the 16th century. And you don't want to miss the charming square, Du Vert Galant, that's nearby. It was built in honor of King Henry IV, and it was nicknamed the Green Galant because of his reputation for amorous escapades. For more information and to create your own lover's itinerary in Paris, you can visit en.parisinfo.com. On to one of my other European favorites, that's in Italy, Florence. Florence is the capital of Tuscany, and it's the symbol of the Renaissance. It's also famous throughout the world for its architectural beauty and its extraordinary works of art, which is why I think it is certainly a city of love. It's charming, and I love the entire Tuscany region. While the best time to shop in Italy is in January, I find the best times to go for romance are in the spring and fall. The weather during both times is very mild, and it's perfect for walking and enjoying the sights. So let's talk about some of those most romantic places to visit in Florence. Ponte Vecchio. It's a place where many make their declaration of love, even though it's one of the most crowded places. Ponte Vecchio is the old bridge. It crosses over the Arno River, and it's special because it's the bridge that wouldn't die. It was the first bridge that was built over the Arno River, and many that came after it just perished from the force of the river. But the Ponte Vecchio withstood the test of time, and it's still there today. Another favorite is the Piazza del Signoria. It's where you'll find those famous sculptures, not necessarily the originals, like the Michelangelo's David. There's also the Bandolini's Hercules by the Medici. And a reminder of what happened to those who crossed the Medici is the statue of Perseo holding Medusa's head by Cellini. Now, Italy's top art museum is the Uffizi Gallery. This is where you'll see Botticelli's Primavera and the Birth of Venus. Also, the Filippo Lippi's Madonna and Child with two angels. And there are, of course, other works of art from Leonardo da Vinci and the Michelangelo. And in Florence, on Valentine's Day, the Italian Ministry of Cultural Heritage offers couples reduced admission to museums and cultural sites. They give you two tickets for the price of one. Now, that's romantic. Now, for views, for a breathtaking view, you want to consider the Piazzale Michelangelo and the Church of San Miniato El Monte. Now, both offer some of the most romantic views of Florence. The city view from Piazzale Michelangelo at sunset is an experience not to be missed. Now, visiting some of the other areas of Tuscany is certainly a must. There are really too many for me to list, so I'll narrow it down to just a couple of my favorites. Castello dei Verrazzano in Chianti is a beautiful castle, and yes, it's owned by the same Verrazzano family with the bridge of the same name in New York. They produce some wonderful wines, olive oil, balsamic vinegar, and honey. It's set along the hills of the Chianti region with some phenomenal views, and they have a restaurant that is excellent. So take some time, explore the region, and have lunch at the Castello dei Verrazzano in Chianti. One of my other favorites is Siena. Siena is probably the loveliest medieval city, and it's a trip that's worth taking, even if you're in Tuscany for just a few days. Siena's heart is its central piazza known as Il Campo, and it's known worldwide for the famous Palio run race. Palio is a horse race that's run around the piazza two times every summer. You may have seen it in the James Bond movie, Quantum of Solace. An activity that I love in the piazza is having pizza and an Italian beer, and then afterwards, sitting in the middle of the piazza, watching the day and people go by. For more information,
Florence and the Tuscany region, go to visitflorence.com and discovertuscany.com. Now, coming across the pond to North America and visiting our neighbors to the north, Montreal, Canada, is not only one of my favorite places, but it is a very romantic place. It's a perfect setting for a romantic getaway because it has boutique hotels, they have excellent cuisine, they have a beautiful waterfront with nice waterfront views, and they have a vibrant nightlife. It's a charming city with a European flair and a French language. Now, the summertime is phenomenal in Montreal when they have one of the largest jazz festivals that lasts practically a month. However, since Valentine's Day is in the winter, I can't leave the winter out, and there's some fabulous activities and attractions during that time, too. Here is a podcast from Montreal Tourism on a lover's plane itinerary.
Welcome to Montreal, one of the most welcoming cities in the world, and its many boroughs rich in history, architecture, and creativity. The Plateau Mont-Royal borough is one of Montreal's main artistic centers, contributing to the city's charm and international influence. When you're on the plateau, which is located east of Mount Royal and right next to downtown, you'll quickly understand why the area is considered among the most creative in the country. Young couples, families, artists, and students all call the plateau their home. The area is also famous for its outdoor staircases. Make sure to visit the borough's most impressive streets, Mount Royal Avenue, St. Laurent Boulevard, St. Denis Street, and Laurier Street, as well as St. Theatre, a street located in Mile End, a neighborhood that should absolutely be visited to experience the bohemian bourgeois lifestyle. Food-wise, the borough has plenty of restaurants, from the simplest cuisine to the finest. If you really want to live like a true Montrealer, your only choice is to follow my advice. While you're on the plateau, you absolutely have to try Montreal's three specialties: smoked meat, bagels, and poutine. And if you plan on living it on the plateau until the wee hours of the morning, you're in luck. Many restaurants serve breakfast until dinner time on weekends. Make sure to take advantage of the many hotspot bars and cafes, perfect for just taking it easy and sending off a few emails to friends and family. Once the signs of spring appear, every Montrealer can agree that one of the best things about the season is when the patios are opened. The city's patios are packed with people having cocktails or sharing a meal outdoors. Perfect for people who want to see and be seen. After indulging, I'd recommend getting a bit of exercise by renting Bixies, Montreal's famous public bikes that let you travel all over the city for just a few dollars. I suggest heading over to one of Montreal's pretty green spaces like Jeanmans Park, a veritable summer playground for kids, or to La Fontaine Park, a destination for lovebirds, people who love to walk, and families. You'll meet different people of all ages, since thousands of Montrealers visit the park every day. Duluth and Prince Arthur Streets are famous for their bring-your-own-wine restaurants. Both streets have a distinct charm and are bordered by restaurants serving international cuisine at reasonable prices, especially since you can pick up a bottle of wine at one of the many SAQ outlets. It's less expensive than purchasing a bottle in a restaurant. The plateau also has plenty of specialty boutiques and chic secondhand shops, some of which are totally original and unconventional. There are also a wide variety of bookstores that offer new and used books in both French and English. Wander into some of the plateau's record stores and ask to hear some of the best music made in Montreal. These stores are the main destination for DJs wanting to stock up on hot new albums on CD and vinyl. Basically, this is the borough where new trends are started, which is why many artists in theater, television, and film, as well as video game and fashion designers, work and live here. Accessible from Mount Royal, Sherbrooke, and Saint Laurent, go ahead and tour the plateau by bus, bike, or on foot. The Plateau Mont-Royal is a trendy neighborhood where life is good. Let yourself be drawn into the borough's charming artistic ambience, perfect for long walks, happy meetings between family and friends, and lively nights out on the town.
Now, for more information on Montreal and to get other Lover's Lane itineraries, visit tourism-montreal.org. Tourism is spelled T-O-U-R-I-S-M-E.
E.
Now, I know you probably thought I'm not going to cover anything here in the United States, but I could not, would not talk about some of the most romantic cities here in the United States, right here at home. And San Francisco is one of them. San Francisco, California is a romantic destination because of its scenic beauty, its ambiance, its atmosphere, and its close proximity to wine country. The very best time to visit San Francisco is the fall, from September to November. These months have warm temperatures, they have fewer crowds, and it's harvest season in wine country. Spring is another good time, but you can expect it to be a bit more chilly than the fall. Now, what should be on your romantic agenda when you're in San Francisco? One is the cable car. Take a ride on the cable car. San Francisco is one of the few places in the world where people can ride on a National Historic Landmark. The cable cars are the world's last permanently operational, manually operated cable car systems in the U.S. The San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency runs three cable car lines, the Powell Hyde, the Powell Mason, and California Street. One area you can reach by cable car is the Fisherman's Wharf. It's a waterfront marketplace, and it has the wharf's famous fishing fleet. You can walk through the wharf and stop at some of the seafood stalls or stop at one of the restaurants if you have a little bit more time. You can get some steamed crabs and, one of my favorites, sourdough French bread. I just love the smell of it. It's best to get it warm right out of the oven. It's a little crunch on the top, that crusty bread crust, and then on the inside it's nice and warm and ooey and gooey. Another place that you can go is Nob Hill. And it may just have one of the best views in San Francisco, especially of the San Francisco Bay. And it's also a great view from the California Street cable car. Nob Hill has the Grace Cathedral, which is a replica of Notre Dame in Paris, Huntington Park, which is the site of arts and shows, and a replica of the 16th century Roman fountain. And there's the Nob Hill Masonic Center, an architectural beauty that hosts musical events. And then, of course, the cable car barn. This is where the cable cars go when they're not in service. Lastly, there's Russian Hill, named for burial sites of Russian hunters who were active in California waters in the early 1800s. It's most famous for Lombard Street, the crookedest street in the world, located between Hyde and Leavenworth Streets. Lombard Street is one of San Francisco's most popular landmarks. Every year, hundreds of thousands of visitors walk or drive down its eight sharp hairpin turns. It's surrounded by Russian Hill mansions. It's perfectly manicured landscaping, and they have beautiful flowers as well. Now, the curvy portion looking up is very enjoyable, and you can get a great, breathtaking view from the top, looking down and onto the San Francisco Bay, the Bay Bridge, and the Coit Tower. For more information on San Francisco, you can go to sanfrancisco.travel. Now, just 90 minutes from San Francisco is the wine country and Napa Valley, one of my favorite places. Napa Valley has over 500 wineries. It's 30 miles long and only 5 miles wide. It has the perfect climate, soil, and topography so that we get some of those great Chardonnays and Cabernet Sauvignon wines. And then, of course, where there's wine, there's food. Napa Valley has some fantastic gourmet dining and culinary experiences. And when in wine country, your accommodations are very important. They actually set the tone for your visit. And Napa has some deluxe lodging. I'll tell you my favorite a little bit later on. Now, harvest season is the best time to go, and it usually takes place in October. But, of course, depending on the actual harvest. Certainly, you can't fool Mother Nature, so you just have to wait it out. Sometimes it's a few days early, sometimes it's a few days late. Each town in Napa has its own unique charm and attractions. There's beautiful hiking in the American Canyon wetlands. You can take a ride on the now infamous Napa Valley Wine Train for a breathtaking experience. You can take a balloon ride with Napa Valley Balloons. You can also stroll Napa Valley's main street in St. Helena. This is where you'll find shops, boutique clothing stores, jewelry stores, art galleries, bakeries, and chocolate shops. And if you're looking for relaxation, head to the spas in Calistoga to experience those mineral pools and those healing mud baths. Now, most hotels offer bicycles for your pleasure, so you can take off on a bike and pedal your way through the wine country. You can have a picnic with wine and cheese, or you can have your hotel prepare a basket for you. And, of course, there's wine tastings. It's best to hire a car or go on an organized tour so you can enjoy the wines and make it back to your hotel safely. Now, I told you about one of my favorite places to stay, and that's Napa Valley Lodge, right in the heart of Napa Valley, in the town of Yountville. The Napa Valley Lodge is close to it all. It is picturesque. They have vineyards. It's designed in a Tuscan villa style. They have lush landscaping, fountains, an outdoor fire pit, and a very, very serene pool area. So to plan your visit to Napa Valley, go to NapaValley.com. Now, my last one on the list is probably by far my favorite. You know, I think I've said that they're all my favorite, and maybe they are for different reasons, but Maui is the place that I'm talking about. Maui, Hawaii, in my opinion, is the most romantic Hawaiian island, and it's one of the top honeymoon destinations in the world. Maui is the second largest Hawaiian island, but it has a small population, which means that it's very suited for and attracts visitors who are looking for sophistication and amenities in small towns and magnificent resorts. Now, go anytime. But I like the winter months, probably so I can get away from my winter situation. It's also milder temperatures, and it's whale watching season. Now, here are some of the things you can do for some Maui romance. Sunrise at Haleakala. Stretching across Maui's southern and eastern coastline is the Haleakala National Park. It's home to Maui's highest peak. Wake up early before the sun comes up and drive up to the Haleakala Visitor Center. It's going to be 9,740 feet above sea level. The best spot to watch the sunrise. Now, I've experienced this several times, and each time was different and unforgettable. Make sure you take a blanket with you because it is cold until the sun spreads its warmth. And if getting up early is not your thing, you can go for the sunset and the starry night. Doesn't that sound romantic? Now, the ascent to Haleakala is a long, winding road that takes some time to drive up, but it is certainly well worth it. There are hiking trails, there are scenic vistas, and you'll discover more endangered species than any other park in the National Park Service. And another fun thing to do if you go up at sunrise is to cycle down. Actually, you're coasting down. And then afterwards, treat yourself to a nice hot breakfast. Now, Maui has a lot of coastline, so another great thing to do is to drive along the Kihei coastline, especially around sunset. Then it is truly magical. For a mix of adventure, scenic beauty, and unique locales, take the road to Hana. Now, Hana is along Maui's rugged eastern coastline, considered one of the last unspoiled Hawaiian frontiers. The legendary road to Hana is only 52 miles from Kahului. However, the drive can take anywhere from 2 to 4 hours to complete because it has 620 curves, hairpin turns, 59 bridges, and some of them are only one lane. Now, what you'll find along the way? Rainforests, waterfalls, plunging pools, dramatic seascapes. Can't you just see why or imagine why Maui is one of these most romantic places? Now, Maui is also a great getaway for whale watching. Remember I said that winter is the whale watching season, and it's some of the best whale watching in the world. The waters off of the West Maui and South Maui coasts are shielded by the West Maui Mountains and Haleakala. It creates a very calm and clear water for high visibility. Humpback whales come in, and they're drawn to the area's shallow waters. They're less than 600 feet deep, and it makes Maui an ideal spot to start your voyage during the winter whale watching season from December until May. And then lastly, with 120 miles of coastline, Maui has over 30 miles of beautiful beaches. Need I say more? So I know you want to plan that Maui experience, and you can Just go to GoHawaii.com to plan your romantic Maui experience. This fire that we call love is too strong for human minds, but just right for human souls. Abrajani, I hope you enjoyed the journey to some of the most romantic cities today. I certainly enjoyed reminiscing the places that I had been to. When we come back, I'm going to find out how other cultures celebrate Valentine's Day. You're listening to The Traveling Eye on HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141.